you give them a quick 1 minute summation of everything you do and who you are?
Worked in 7 different industries directly that I actually had skin in the game involved in different capacities. We can get into all that, I'm sure, later on. So I'm going to give you an answer you probably weren't expecting. I don't know if there's ever a moment I fell in love with sales.
Mm-hmm. That one key thing to take that next level in your business or life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
A lot of those guys are looking to give, right?
Yeah.
They're looking to give back. They're genuinely, you know, if they're that successful, mm-hmm. they're probably very committed to what they do. Mm-hmm. And is that parody or is that real?
No. This is what he actually tweeted.
Now, Kevin O'Leary is a character, man. I honestly feel like he's like playfully trolling, but he's actually serious. Welcome back to Hustle Over Everything podcast. This is the podcast where you receive stories, tips, and tactics from entrepreneurs who have done it. I'm Alex.
And I'm Owen Osinde.
And today we have a great guest in the building. You know, you're actually the first one in Everyday Joy Studios, the first guest in studio.
Shout out to Everyday Joy, man.
Shout out to Everyday Joy.
Shout out to Joe.
Most definitely. So we got Pooya Hadari in the building.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Most definitely. For people looking and people watching, listening, could you give them a quick 1 minute summation of everything you do and who you are?
Yeah, so just to sum it up really quickly, what I do is all sales-related, business-related. I've been in sales and business for the past decade, worked in 7 different industries directly that I actually had skin in the game involved, different capacities. We can get into all that, I'm mm-hmm. sure, later on. And then from there, I got into doing some outsourced sales with some different companies, with some different partners of mine. From there, I decided to venture out and do exactly what I do best, really sales training, leadership training, some consulting work. I wanted to really do that internationally. I wanted to scale out what I'm doing and not be tied down to U.S., Canada only. That's exactly what I do now. So I work with entrepreneurs, business owners, online marketers, sales professionals in all over the world and just helping them with their goals, whether it's business goals, whether it's, you know, eventually whatever their goals lead to.
Most definitely.
Yeah. How do you define that though? Like, so you're working with business owners, helping them with their goals and helping them set up their business structure. But what does that look like when you approach a agency? How do you target your ideal customer and figure out what their goals are and how you can assist them in their business?
Yeah, so I'll try to, that was a multi-layered question. I'll try to go back to the initial part of that. And then we can continue to dig deeper. But I would say it really depends. It depends on who I'm working with, depends on what their goals and targets are. Mm-hmm. When I come in, I'm not looking to do auditing on every part of the business, mm-hmm. right? I'm looking at the two areas that I focus on, which is client acquisition, client retention, which are the most important areas of any business, in my opinion, because at the end of the day, without sales, without revenue, it's not a business. It's a hobby.
Yeah.
You know, it's a passion. It's good. You can have that, but it's not really a business without that. So I focus on client acquisition. There's a lot that goes into that. Marketing side of things, the lead generation side of things, the sales side of things, sales processes, systems, and all of that. And you look at client retention, which, you know, you think about the offers, the actual products, the services, all of that. So, you know, it really depends. It depends what their goals are, what their targets are. But those are the areas that I'm focused on. So I'm not looking at, you know, every part of the business.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yo, so like every sales guy always has that one moment they fell in love with sales.
Sure.
That first sale that just was, man, like that felt good. What was that like for you?
So I'm going to give you an answer you probably weren't expecting. I don't know if there's ever a moment I fell in love with sales.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to this day, it's not something that I would do on my spare time. You know, I'd rather be traveling or, you know, sitting on a beach in Greece than just, you know, doing a sales call, right? So it's not, you know, I feel like I realized I want to get into sales and I would love sales when, first of all, I found that I have a natural propensity for it. You know, Stamina was there. You know, English is my third language. So mm-hmm. I speak multiple languages. I can think in a variety of different ways. Being good at sales is really being a good problem solver, in my mm-hmm. opinion. And just also being very solution-oriented. Mm-hmm. And naturally, I've always been very optimistic just by nature. Mm-hmm. So I've always been very solution-oriented. So in a deal, even if that negotiation goes 4 hours, which I've had many of, especially in the auto industry, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be thinking, you know, this isn't going anywhere or I'm tired or looks like this isn't just going to happen. I was always solution-oriented, knowing it's going to happen. So, you know, that's why I continued in sales. It wasn't because, oh, I fell in love magically one moment. But when I was young, just still in high school, I knew that I want to get into business. I knew that I want to make a lot of money. I knew that I want to have a life that the formal education route just would not bring. And I knew right then and there, I'm not going to continue, you know, formal education and schooling and all of that. And I figured I want to get into business. So I thought, what's the best way to get into business? Get into sales first. If you can, again, control the revenue side of the business, you can get into, you know, good relationships with management, with partners, with all of that, work up the corporate ladder, and then eventually venture out, which is pretty much what I did. Mm-hmm. In hindsight, it seems like it's 2020, but it was definitely a lot of ups and downs. And, you know, it was a long journey, but that's pretty much what I did.
Yeah.
No, you said that you speak three languages. Mm-hmm. English is your third. What are the other two?
So first language is Kurdish. So I was born in Iran. I'm from the northern part of Iran. So we speak our own language. We have our own flag. All of that is like a smaller minority in the country. So first language is Kurdish. Second language is Farsi. And then third is English. Those are languages I speak fluently. Obviously, we all speak a bit of broken French and other, you know, little words here and there.
Naturally, from like ninth grade English. I mean, ninth grade French.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And my fiance is Greek, so I speak a bit of Greek as well. Enough to put together sentences to do, you know, basic stuff.
Yeah.
I've been to Greece a couple of times, so every time we travel there, I pick up more and I challenge myself and I order my own food or coffee or whatever, you know. So, yeah, but yeah, this language is actually speak fluently, Kurdish, Farsi, English.
That's amazing, bro. All right, so from doing research on you, one thing you said that kind of impressed me a bit was that you said that you spend around $5,000 investing in yourself every few months.
Sure. I know what you're referring to. So
break that down.
When I was young, this is maybe 19, 20 years old or so. Mm-hmm. Around then, I started making my first six figures. About a year and a half later, I got into some opportunities or I was making more money. And then I realized, you know, the more access I have, the more proximity I have to good information, to powerful people, to just being in those networks and those circles, the more I grow, the more I just hold myself to a higher standard, the more my outlook really evolves. So then I told myself, you know, this is a challenge for the year. I did that for 1 year. I said, every quarter, I'm going to invest $5,000 in myself. Well, initially, I said every quarter, I'm going to make a major investment in myself. At that time, major was 5K. And I think still to a lot of people, you know, 5K a quarter is a decent enough investment. And that could be in anything. That could be in courses, mentors, traveling to business seminars, conferences, whatever. So I did that for 1 year. So that year I invested 20K in myself. And that year my income tripled to multiple six figures. And there's no coincidence there. You know, there's no coincidence at all. To me, it was very clear.
What was it that you were seeing? Is it like the connections? Is it the certain knowledge you were getting that you applied it right away that catapulted your income?
Yeah, so great question. You know, yeah. I think it's a bit of everything. But before I answer you, bring me back to what I do now with that, because I have a different concept that I kind of apply to the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But to answer your question, it was everything, man. I remember being at a business conference. This was in Miami. And there was a couple of guys there, and I sat VIP again. I wanted to pay the most to be like right up front, to be involved, to be in the back, you know,
to be visible.
Parties, whatever it is, right? Yeah, to make those connections, to have those conversations, because I wasn't necessarily there for the information. That was good, but I was there to meet some people. So I remember seeing a couple of guys that I used to watch on YouTube that I used to know their names. And I know a couple of guys that were involved in different businesses and just seeing them right there, you know. Mm-hmm. I told myself, you know, every now and then I get an opportunity, I'm going to go up and talk to them. And I remember one very specifically, I walked up and I was talking to the guy. We were having a great conversation. And for whatever reason, he just put his hand on my shoulder. And he's just like, listen, man, you seem like a talented young man. You're definitely going to make it. If I've done it, you can definitely do it. And just things like that physical touch, that, you know, actual real moment I had with this guy. That was enough to justify the entire investment, the entire trip to Miami, that business conference, all of that, right? So there was a bit of that. There was information, just actually getting access to good knowledge, good information. Some of those investments were in, you know, mentors that I worked with directly. Some of them were, you know, in smaller type of conferences where, you know, maybe there's 100 people and I'm actually getting to meet a lot of guys. So there was a lot of that, you know. It was everything, really. It was the experiences. A lot of the relationships I built are still friends of mine to this day. You know, I have a lot of calls that I do, like I mentioned, with clients and meetings and things like that. And I run this group training thing, which is basically my own inner circle with a lot of my clients that are all different industries, all different countries. It's one of the things that I'm actually passionate about right now, because a lot of people come together and those are calls that we do. A lot of times I bring on guest speakers.
Yeah.
And those guest speakers are from the networks that I built all those years, from all those travels that are paying dividends now, you know, so many years later.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about maintaining a network, right? Because a lot of your business is all about maintaining a strong network. So how do you approach yourself? Like if you're at that Miami event and you're, okay, I want to grow my network here. You make that contact, having that conversation with that person, then the following up, because we can all go to conferences. Here's my business card. I forget about you. And that whole trip, you got that contact, but you never did anything with it. What have you found that works for you that has helped you grow, use that network to grow your business today?
Yeah, so that goes back to relationship building, which is the core essence of sales, right? It's relationship building in all different ways. And I've never once handed out a business card. So I never went to these conferences and said, here's my business card, or you know, what can you do for me? Or, you know, looking to just get my foot in the door in that way. Or let me pick your brain, or let me do this and that. I don't think anybody likes to hear that. I get that all the time.
Man, that pick your brain thing.
Yeah.
It, like when I hear that, I visually see the image of picking your brain. Just ask me to go. Let's play some, you know, some sports or something. Let's go do something fun and
actually
let's
connect. Go for a coffee. You know, somebody like we were talking about earlier, we love coffee. Sure.
Yeah.
That sounds a lot better than let's go. Let me pick your brain.
Yeah.
You know, so it was never that. It was never with an intention of just wanting to take. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to, you know, just build genuine relationships and, you know, come from a humble place. Not try to say, this is who I know. This is what I do. This is what I've done. This is what I've accomplished. Mm-hmm. This is how great I am. Because nobody cares. That's the same thing in sales. Nobody cares about how great your products are, your services are, how great your company or brand is. They care, you know, what's in it for me? Why should I even care? Why should I even listen? You know, where's the value here? So I tried to show, you know, genuine value. And back in the day where there wasn't much that I had done or accomplished that I could even, you know, speak about, I knew there were different ways I could bring value. Even if it was just, you know, I'm going to be super humble and be more of a mentee to you. And I'm going to ask you questions, and I'd be very, you know, grateful if you would answer those questions. Mm-hmm. And even that would, you know, buy you 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And I can't tell you the amount of conversations I had with pretty big known, you know, big name guys, well-known celebrity entrepreneurs, if you want to call them that, you know, in the hallway of a conference. You know, if I'm going to the bathroom or something, I'll see them and just have a quick conversation. And, you know, we end up talking for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, get to ask them questions they would never answer on stage, you know, so...
Yeah. And those people always want to be asked questions. They always want to feel used. They want to feel like, man, okay, this is a person on the come up. If they're asking me these things, I was in that position at one point as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not doing myself a favor because I know what it's like to be in that position. And you just are searching for that one key thing to take that next level in your business or life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of those guys are looking to give, right? They're looking to give back. They're genuinely, you know, if they're that successful, mm-hmm. they're probably very committed to what they do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they probably can speak on it. They probably can, you know, and if the questions are good questions, they'll be, you know, more likely to answer. I had this one question when I was in that time frame and I was going to all these conferences and meeting these people. I would ask the same question to everybody and just see what the different answers were. And I would say I was 20 at the time. And I would say, you know, knowing everything you know today, if you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would be the one piece of advice you'd give yourself? And then I got everything. I got everything from this pretty well-known marketer saying, I told myself not to do drugs. That was the answer. And I was like, okay, great. You know, point taken.
Is that GC?
No.
Okay.
He's like known for being a marketer. I wouldn't name him anyways, but no, it was two, you know, actual well in-depth type of answers to, you know, one guy telling me I would do exactly this. I would go to all these business owners. Here'd be the exact pitch. I would partner with them, older business owners in this exact niche. I'll tell them I'm going to build out your sales systems for you, all of that. So I got that answer and this answer, you know, and I just kind of, you know, took it all with a grain of salt, you know, thought about it and took what I liked and applied it.
Nice.
So if you were to respend that 20 grand, where would be the bulk of that dollars being allocated to? And where would you not put it in that you feel like, oh, I wouldn't have done that again?
So great question. I'll go back to what I said earlier. We're going to circle back to. So what I do nowadays in terms of that 5K investment every quarter. So I modified that over the years. And what I decided to do is I said, every quarter, I'm going to travel. And there's no dollar amount on it. It could be a road trip. It could be going to Europe. It could be doing whatever, right? But I decided every quarter I'm going to travel because I think that's one thing that's added just a huge amount of perspective to my life, to how I see things. Every time I travel, I study businesses. So any business I engage with, could be a restaurant we're eating at, I'll look at if it's owner ran. I'll look at if, you know, and the owner's very much involved, or if it's, you know, more of a chain business. I'll look at all these different things, how their services, how many products they have on the actual menu, limited, and they're specialized or more generalized. Like, I'll look at all these things, right? And I'll actually study and I'll learn a lot just from observing businesses all around the world. Also, I think it helps to have your pulse on the economy and just kind of know what's going on around the world.
Yeah.
So usually summers, I'll do a major trip, like 4, 5, 6 weeks.
Yeah.
We'll go multiple countries and I'll do that. Every now and then, every quarter, we'll do like a, you know, smaller trip. So that was my evolution of that. Every quarter, I'm going to invest in myself. Now it's every quarter I travel.
Yeah. And that's my dream, man. I've always been saying the same thing. Like every quarter, I want to take a vacation. Mm. I mean, yours is like investing in yourself. I'd also think that when you do travel, when you do leave like your desk, and actually do something for a week just to recharge, you feel that you come back with so much vigor in what you do and you just feel so much freer. I did a trip last spring just going to Tulum and just having a good time. I came back, and when I started my new job, I just felt lighter. I just felt like so much more focused. And I think that aspect of play, people overlook it just because you think that everything is all about the dollar. Everything's all about it's grind, 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 grind. And I had that mentality for the longest time. And I thought breaks, if I take a break, there is someone out there who's just going to overtake me. But you realize in the scope of things that that break can actually buy you more time, can buy you more creativity, more inspiration and the things that you do. So we got to start taking that hustle culture and just flipping it around and being like, okay, it's okay to actually invest in yourself by not doing anything and not just, okay, I'm going to buy a course to do or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, we should just start normalizing that even more.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think either way is investing in yourself, whether it's health, like we were talking about earlier, whether it's, you know, traveling, whether it's business investments, it's about investing in yourself. Yeah. That's an interesting conversation, right? Because I'm right on the line too. The first few years of my sales career, I worked 6 days a week, sometimes 7 days a week, 12-hour days for sure, sometimes even longer. And, you know, just completely in the grind, you know, I that was the main priority. I didn't do anything else. And that's all I did. And I got the results in terms of financial results, but my health wasn't good. You know, relationship, just I didn't have time for that really.
Yeah.
So I couldn't really allocate my time to anything else that I wanted to. Never took a vacation, never took a trip or any of that. That's why when I got the opportunity, I decided to sort of shift my focus and then make that a priority. You know, travel every quarter and add that perspective. I feel like you're adding layers to your character.
Mm-hmm.
Every time, you know, you're adding different layers to your personality.
Yeah.
And I think that comes across.
Let's talk more about that, right? Because, you know, you were involved in a couple sales opportunities, then you broke off to do what you do now. So give some insights into that time in your life where you experienced that success, which led you to being Puya Hadari right now that we know you of, helping entrepreneurs and small business owners.
Sure. I mean, it depends what part of it
you want. Yeah, because, you know, you worked with like the Grant Cardones, you were helping them set up sales systems and et cetera. So share more about what you were doing and building that expertise that gave you that insight to actually break off and do it on a solo aspect.
Yeah, I think if I had to really sort of compartmentalize it so that it's
sequential.
Yeah, exactly. Sequential and easy for people to understand. I would say it was sales first. Mm-hmm. So just really learning sales, mastering sales, understanding what it takes, what it even means to generate revenue too. Mm-hmm. The exchange of goods and services for money or credit. That's kind of what transactions are. Transactions are the building blocks of any economy. That's sales. So when they say sales runs the world or sales solves all, that's a saying in business. Sales solves everything. It's real. It's a real thing, right? And again, like I said earlier, without sales, you don't have a business. Anybody can say, you know, I got a t-shirt or I got a mug or I got this and that. But if you don't have sales for it, then that's just a hobby of yours. It's a passion of yours. So I understood that first. And I sort of, you could say, mastered that part first. Although I believe learning is a lifelong journey and we're always getting better and always learning new things, new aspects of what we do. You could say I focused on honing in that craft first. So that was sales. Then I got into sort of leadership roles and positions and partnership roles. I became a partner shareholder at a couple different companies, and now I was a leader. I had to duplicate myself into multiple offices, you know, multiple teams. I hired hundreds of people, trained hundreds of salespeople, and that was a whole different game. Now, because when I was in sales, any company that I worked in, I was there to take your head off. Like if you were there, and people would know this, anybody that I worked with in sales, if you were there, you know, we were friends, but when it came to business, I was there for my goals. I wasn't there to make friends. I wasn't there for fun. I wasn't there for relationships.
You're a shark.
I was a shark, And I let everybody know. I was very vocal about it. Nowadays, would I do that? Probably not. I was younger and more hot-headed, you know. But, you know, I went into every company in my first week or so. I would say, I'm going to be the top sales guy here. So just so you all know, I'll be here on my off days. If you're expecting to clean up deals when I'm not here, I'll be here every day. And, you know, you've been in sales, right? I think we talked about it first time we met.
Yeah.
So you know what that feels like. Naturally, everybody, you know, sort of, you know, hit me at first.
What gave you that chip, though? You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's a trick question, man. That could be a
what gave you that
question
to go in your off days?
Let's go there.
Sure, let's go there. But remind me of your actual question, so it doesn't seem like I'm avoiding questions.
That was just like to set up the parameters of like what got you here today. But to get to that level where you are really successful, there must be like an internal driver
absolutely
that was never going off.
Absolutely.
So share more about
still there to this day.
Yeah.
You can probably feel it.
Yeah. But to give like that boastfulness, I'm like, I'm that guy.
It really wasn't about like the credit. It really wasn't, believe it or not, it really wasn't about everybody thinking I'm great or wanting to be boastful. Mm-hmm. I couldn't care less. It was just letting them know, like, this is the standard. This is what I hold myself to. This is how it's going to be. So I don't want any room later on, if we're working together, if I'm part of this company, to be, you know, like, hey man, you're taking all the deals, or, you know, you're very like selfish when it comes to the business or whatever it might be, right? I just didn't leave room for that. I made it very clear. I'm here for my goals and for business purposes first and foremost. Then it's friendships and relationships and network and whatever else. You know, sure, we can hang out after work, but just know that during business hours, I'm focused on business. So it was just very clear. I felt, you know, I had to be, you could say, committed to my own goals, to my own future first, before I can commit to a friendship or to what's best for this company or this brand. You know, and again, I was young in sales and I was just coming up and I was hungry and I wanted that, you know, monetary success as well. So that's all I was focused on. So we'll come back to the compartmentalization later about sales leadership and then doing outsource sales and then venturing out in business for myself. We can address all that. But to go into what you guys were discussing, why I have that chip on my shoulder, I think comes from where I was born and how I was raised, right? So like I said, I was born in Iran, whole different part of the world, whole different culture. You guys probably heard things here and there, but you know, the reality is we don't have the opportunities over there that we have here.
Yeah.
It's just not there. It's just not possible. It's a different reality. It's a completely different reality, right? Mm-hmm. And I was born there. I lived there till I was 10 years old. And being 10, you know, you basically grew up there, right? You've basically had all your...
That's who you are.
Yeah, you've had all your early experiences there, you know, and at that point, I had no concept that I'll even be here. I'll even be migrating here, or, you know, Canada or the U.S. or any of these countries were even an option. It was just that, you know, I was born here. This is where I live. This is my home.
This is life.
Exactly, right? So, you know, moving over here, I realized right away, first of all, how different things were. Mm-hmm. I still remember to this day, very clearly, my first day at school here. And I walked into a classroom and I thought, like, this is a zoo. What's going on here? Like, where I came from in the classroom, it was discipline, structure. I got beat times in class.
Did they hit you with a ruler on your knuckles?
I think I was in grade one. I got smacked in the middle of the head with like a meter stick type thing. Like, no remorse from the teacher's side. No, none of that. It was part of the culture at that time. By the way, I'm not saying that's how it is now. Don't blame me if you're watching this from that part of the world. I'm just saying those were my experiences. So coming from that, you know, disciplined type of culture where opportunity is very scarce, to walking in here and seeing a classroom and kids are throwing things and running all over the place and
talking back to the teacher,
all that stuff amazed me.
Yeah.
So to me, this was chaos. And then I just realized, you know, as I got older, you know, the opportunities that we have here, the family that I have back home, the friends I have back home, they don't have these opportunities. So it almost felt like I was chosen in a way, as much as I'm not the most spiritual person, but that's what it felt like. That's the best way I could explain it.
That's like every immigrant too. Like if you listen to every successful business person at all levels, like even just the local bodega person, it's like they're driven by just making it because they know that in this country, there's chances that you're given that people back home don't have that chance. And I totally relate to that because I came to Canada at 10 years old.
Really?
Yeah. And I remember also the same experience when at recess, they're giving us food. And I'm thinking, wow, you're giving us free food just as a snack, and I get to go out and play. And the classroom, they're like,
free food at
yeah, they're giving us like Rice Krispies. They're giving us like cakes. This is like a fence side in North York. Like,
interesting.
Yeah, when I used to live in York Mills.
Damn.
Yeah.
Did you get free snacks?
I don't recall.
Yeah. Maybe like lunch, like one time lunch.
They will give us like some free milk.
Free milk,
chocolate milk. So man, it was a big big culture shock, man. And like the way the rooms were made and the teachers, the way they're teaching, I was just like, wow, same thing. I was shocked because all I know is law and order in school. Whatever the teacher says, you listen. You gotta ask to do things, you gotta ask for permission everywhere you go because they want us to be like very, very disciplined. And every immigrant family, there's always that chip of like, hey man, you know what? My cousins are relying on me to do well, to represent my family, to put on a good name. Because if I don't make something out of myself here, then it'll just be a wasted opportunity because I know my relatives want this super bad and I just wanted it by not going hard. There's one thing of going hard and not really making it, but then there's another thing of just being given the opportunity and not doing anything with it. And that's why ever since I knew about entrepreneurship and business and wanting to be successful, I've never let my foot off the pedal, and I never will until I feel like I'm proud of myself for being in this country. Man, it's a blessing being, bro, having a Canadian passport, one of the greatest gifts you could ever have.
It's definitely a gift. Yeah. Yeah. Were you born here?
I was born here.
Okay, so.
Yes.
Yeah. There's the contrast here. Yeah. So you should definitely be grateful. Where you are.
No, I definitely am grateful. And I've had similar experiences, though, where I've gone from, actually, when I was 12, I went from public school to private school.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a huge difference for me personally. You know, where I knew that I was being given an opportunity that not a lot of people had.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that was going from like the worst neighborhood in Toronto, one of the worst, to one of the like the most prestigious schools.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like a huge thing. I remember telling like someone kid in grade 6 that I was heading out, and he's like, I remember his name was Bilal. And he was like,
man, I like Bilal, eh? Exactly. One of my close friends is Bilal.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Hilarious if it was the same person.
Yeah.
But he was like, you know, you're giving an opportunity that no one gets, eh? Take advantage of it, you know? So, like, when I went there, I went with a different mentality. I was looking at all the kids there, like, y'all are just squandering this. And they were playing, like, fake gangster, like, tag.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this isn't a game back where I'm from. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I realized.
Real life.
Yeah, it was real life. So I realized that there's a difference in the setting. So I was like, all right, I can take advantage of this and, you know, continue to flourish versus being in public school. That's one thing that like changed me. So if I was ever have kids now, I'm like, all right, definitely going to private.
You're going to take kids to private school.
For sure. Yeah. I would double dip, actually.
Really?
Private and public. So you could, you know, get a sense of both.
Just repeat your own experience, basically.
Yeah, I think it's an experience worth repeating so you can get a sense of the difference between people. Because when you in private school, it's silos. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Especially in private schools, because a lot of rich people go there.
Mm-hmm.
So they are like those kids, they know that they're rich and take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas in public school, ain't nobody know that.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's funny. More people steal in private school than in public school.
Yep, because not surprised, yeah.
Because in public school, you're like, hey, I don't know anybody's thing, so I'm just going to leave it. Mm-hmm. But in private school, people are like, he's just on the street. I know who he is. And like, mm-hmm. they're a lot more, you know, greedy in that sense. So having both experiences, I think, are very monumental for a lot of youth. So, yeah, man. So I've had my own experience where I've like seen the stark differences, but nothing compares to y'all, where it's like country to country.
Yeah,
like yeah, that's a huge difference.
Yeah, that immigrant mentality is definitely a real thing.
Yeah.
So I would say that's one. But on top of that as well, the reason it's a real thing is you get perspective.
Yeah.
So the key takeaway here, I guess, would be perspective.
Perspective.
When you have perspective, everything's just different.
Yeah.
You'll never catch me complaining about some basic things or day-to-day life or whatever else it might be. I just never have. I never will, because I have perspective. You understand how much worse things could be, you know, and you're very grateful for where you are today. But then that's where most people stop. I would say somebody like myself, I think even yourself, it sounds like, would go along the more of the mindset of always grateful but never satisfied. And you mentioned earlier, you know, you're going to continue to go hard until you get to where you think that's your measure of success. For me, I don't think there's a ceiling. I don't think there's ever a time, because as you grow and as you evolve, as you get better, as you discover more in life, as you could say achieve more, but achieving more could just be anything. It could be experiences. It could be wealth comes in different shapes and forms, right? Mm-hmm. I think as you evolve and as you grow, you know, so does your potential. Mm-hmm. So does the ceiling. It's not something you'll ever catch or reach. It's like your shadow, right? It continues to evolve and grow with you. So for me, I basically live by that. Always grateful. I genuinely am very grateful in every second of every day. Thankfully, I think, again, part of this is by nature. I'm just always very optimistic, happy, just naturally. That's my baseline, so that's good. I'm always grateful, but I'm also never satisfied. And that goes back to full circle to the question of where that chip on my shoulder came from. It's partially nurture, being an immigrant, coming from a different part of the world, having that perspective. It's partially nature. It's partially the fact that I'm just ultra competitive, even when I played sports and, you know, all of that to this day. And also just, you know, I'm just never satisfied because I know what I could do.
Yeah.
I know my potential. I know what my standards are. And I just hold myself to my own standards.
So at 27, right, what does that success look like to you?
What does the future success look like?
Yeah.
The only way I could really define it right now would be living a truly fulfilled life completely on my own terms, mm-hmm. and complete time freedom and financial freedom. That's it. And it's very broad because, you know, I've seen how much things can change in 3, 5, 7 years. So I can only imagine how things will change in 2 decades, 3 decades. You know, mm-hmm. it's not something that I even really think about to that degree or try to define it, because I think it's just you're putting constraints on yourself. And I'd rather just not put constraints on myself in any way. I'd rather just look to, you know, get better in every way, look to get better mentally, physically, in all areas, and continue to expand. And again, like I said, as you expand, you'll be surprised how much you can do. You'll be surprised what could happen. You'll be surprised at the opportunities that are available. So I don't have a definition for you.
This podcast is brought to you by Nyorai Cellars. If you didn't know, Nyorai Cellars is the only Black-owned wine company in Canada. Right now, I'm holding the Rosé, the 2021 Rosé bottle. This drink is amazing. I mean, it's perfect for those dishes such as seafood, where you're cooking shrimp, you're having some pasta, whatever it is you're having, grab a bottle of Nyorai Cellars, the Rosé. If you're having a date night with your significant other, you know what to grab. Grab the Nyorai. Whatever it is, grab the Nyorai. I mean, you will not go wrong with this wine. It's perfect for everybody. If you've never drank wine, this is a great bottle for you. Or even if you're a wine expert, you're an aficionado and you drink everything. I mean, you cannot go in Nyorai. I'm telling you, this wine is really, really good. And even though I'm boosting it this hard, is because I really love drinking it and I'm someone who loves to drink wine. So whatever it is, whatever the special occasion, check out Nyorai. They have Sauvignon Blancs, they have Rieslings. I'm holding the Rosé right now. They have a wide variety of different collections of different wines you can choose from. Make sure to check them out. The link is going to be in the description. Check them out. Order a crate for yourself, or you can send a gift to someone that you want to give some wine to. You can't go wrong with that. So Nyorai Cellars, check them out. Link will be in the description. And now back to the show.
So, yeah. I was just going to say on that topic, it's like when we think about success, it's pushing the envelope every single time, right? And you got to ask yourself, like, why am I even doing this over and over? If I'd ask you right now, would you say you feel like a success?
Yes and no.
Because everything you said that defines success is the financial freedom, which I think you have achieved that already.
Yeah.
You have the time to do things, which I believe you do have the time to do so. So you already are a success already. So to continue wanting more is like, you know, and this is not even on you. It's just in general, all of us, I've been successful. I've been the life that I have now. Like I was like, man, I want to live in Toronto. I want to work on something that I'm passionate about with people that I care about. I want to have some impact, which the podcast has allowed me the platform to do that. And I have my family. I am successful. I am where I want to be. So that level, I've learned for me that desire at the core of it, even though you have it, can be kind of the root of your own misery at the end of the day too, because you'd be there complaining or thinking, oh, I want more. But then you stop and you say, damn, I used to want this thing that I have right now 3 years ago. And I'm not even looking at it. I'm not even enjoying it. It's like, I wanted to live downtown Toronto. I have that. But now I'm thinking about, man, I want to buy a house in, let's say for purpose sake, I want to buy a house in Rosedale or Lawrence Park. And I haven't even really settled in where I'm at yet. And I'm already thinking about those other things. So it's just like when I talk to entrepreneurs, I'm noticing this trend about us is we're never satisfied with our station. The ones that we worked so hard for to achieve, but we're all just like thinking ahead of getting to the next spot.
Yeah. So a couple of things there. I feel like you just have to say this. I'm not saying that's the right way to be or the right way to think, right? As success is everybody's own definition of success, right? You want to be a school teacher and make, you know, whatever, 50, 70, 80K a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, be home with your kids and have a 9-to-5 and have summers off, and that's where you're happy and you feel genuinely gratified, then perfect. That's success, you know. Ray Dalio, I don't know if you guys are familiar with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ray Dalio says your measure of success is by what you want to accomplish, you know. So you want to cure the world of certain diseases or whatever you want to give to philanthropy and all that, you might need $100 million, right? You want to live in an apartment by yourself and you're okay eating pizza and you're happy and you just want to hang out with your friends, you're probably good with 30, 40, 50K, right? So the measure of success is defined by, you know, what you want to accomplish, how you want to live. So I think it comes down to that. I don't think there's a right or wrong way. I definitely don't believe that. I used to think that. I used to be very rigid in my definition of success. It was very much financial success. But nowadays, man, I think, you know, whatever makes you happy, whatever makes you genuinely happy, though, not, you know, I'm settling, I'm okay with this and just, you know, thinking you're happy, but whatever genuinely makes you happy, whatever that North Star is for you, I think that's success. It's living a life on your own terms, whatever that means for you, whatever your terms are, right? So I think it comes down to that. But for somebody like myself, you know, I don't feel that not enjoying the moment or not enjoying, you know, all the traveling I'm doing and all the things that, yes, when I was 15, 16, 17, writing down my goals every day, I would write those things down and I've pretty much checked off all of those. So yeah, you could say, all right, well, I'm successful now, you know, but what am I going to do? Just sit there and, you know, gloat about my, you know, glorious days or whatever, you know. I feel like if you are grateful, if you're happy, if you're, you know, you're not stressed or always in a state of anxiety because you're thinking ahead, then, you know, then yeah, be grateful on a day to day. But also, I just feel like I'm never satisfied. I never will be, because it's about growth. I think just life is about growth. I think it's growth could be anything. It could be reading, could be learning more, could be learning different languages. It could be traveling more. It could be whatever, again, depths you want to add to your character, whatever layers you want to add to your character. I think, you know, there's a lot to do and not enough time. So that's my personal take on it. I personally feel like I'm always grateful and I genuinely feel good with that, but I don't know if I'll ever be quote unquote satisfied.
Yeah. What do you think, bro?
Man, I have a grandfather that was really rich.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he owned like a street in Jamaica, you know, multiple properties. And I have a grandmother who was the teacher in your analogy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and she more so served the community, served her family. One had a huge family. My grandmother had a huge family. My grandfather does not have a huge family, maybe two kids, one's in the States, you know, well, two is in the States, one's here in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So even though he, you know, had a successful career, he worked in the Detroit plants, saved up his money, came back to Jamaica, bought up land and started, like, you know, going, playing Monopoly, you know? So looking at both of their lives, man, really gave me perspective, because when my grandmother passed, it was a celebration and you couldn't pack up the church, you know, you couldn't find a seat in that church when she passed, you know? Versus looking at my grandfather now, who's still alive, but he's getting robbed right now. You know, people are, I can't wait till he passes to look at his...
to take his assets.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? So looking at both of those, it's like a stark difference. And in my life, as someone who is aspiring for more, like, it lets me know that there is more, but what you sacrifice along that way can come and bite you. You know, I look at my aunts and my mom and look at their relationship with him, and there is a bit of resentment because he locked himself away and focused on the business. You know, so I know that there is a line that you have to maintain as you grow as an entrepreneur, or else you're going to lose the family and friends that mean a lot to you. You know, so my goal is to reach, it's like, it's like a tug of war between your goals and your friends and family, mm-hmm. you know? So my goal is to reach as far as I can while maintaining that tug of war, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, that's understandable.
Man, there's a crazy tweet Kevin O'Leary had the other day. You guys see that tweet?
No.
Man, essentially he was saying that...
was it about FTX?
Not even that. It was like this tweet about how everything you do for success, it's like disregard your wife, disregard everything. achieve success at like all costs. It was, I think I liked it somewhere. Let me try and find it. But
yes, yeah, that's what I wouldn't agree with. I feel like, you know, you have to have your priorities. You have to have, you know, close relationships. That definitely comes first before just wanting to make money. Yeah, I wouldn't define success as just money. So I feel like, you know, it's not, I agree with you in that analogy with your grandfather. I've seen examples of that. I've seen real personal life examples of that as well. You know, people in the family who have done well. So I've seen both sides too. And I definitely agree. You know, it's a lot of those guys, if you could go back to them, they would tell you they wouldn't sacrifice what they sacrificed to get to where they are. If they could go back, they would change it.
Yeah. It's like,
none of those things matter. What matters is that you achieve success and become free. Then you can do whatever you like.
Is that parody or is that real?
No. This is what he actually tweeted.
Now, Kevin O'Leary's a character, man. I honestly feel like he's like playfully trolling, but he's actually serious. So there was also an interview where someone said the distribution of wealth is 10 times or whatever times towards billionaires. And the rich people, the poor people don't have any sort of access to it. And he's like, that's great. It's perfect. It makes you want to aspire for more.
Yeah. So, yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
No, so yeah. It's like, yeah, I feel like he's truthful, but also trolling at the same time.
I just think he's tone deaf, you know? Like, I think when you've made it to a certain station in life, everything else to you becomes that, how could you not be possible to achieve this?
Yeah, so you think that? I don't think he is, man. I think he's a smart guy. I think that's part of his character.
You think he's playing to his brand?
Yeah.
I think he's playing to his brand. I agree with you. I think he's a smart guy. I think he knows exactly what he's doing, man. I don't think he's tone deaf. He does enough traveling, enough dealing and wheeling with people to know, you know, what's going on.
And that's true. He did come from the ends when, you know, his boss used to tell him, scrap that gum off the floor, and seeing how, you know, he came from humble beginnings.
Yeah.
He knows what it's about.
Anybody who's that successful and hasn't just been given that money is not going to say that and mean it. I don't think, at least. So I feel like knowing a little bit about him, obviously, you know, I don't know him personally, but I think it's that. I think he's trolling a little bit. I think he's joking a little bit. But I'm sure, like you said, there's a bit of, you know,
there's a bit of truth. There's a bit of truth in there, man.
Yeah. After a while of being wealthy, I think it does get to your character after a while. You know, so I think
relationships change, right? Mm-hmm. Things change, relationships change. You know, people ask you for money, things happen. So you know, yeah, things do change for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think, yeah, it's a fine balance of being humble and having your priorities in check, and then also, you know, staying focused.
So, you know, one thing about having these business podcasts is that we don't really get into like the real crux of being a successful entrepreneur, man. Mm-hmm. When you reached a certain level, how did your circle change? How was that for you?
So I had a really militant view on this when I was younger. Mm-hmm. Just like I said earlier, with everything, with work, with what I was doing when I was going into different companies to say, I'm going to be the top guy here. I had that militant view, which really wasn't healthy. It was on the full end of the spectrum, right? Where I had to, as I got older and more mature, I got a bit wiser and I had to dial that back and learn how to play the game more and just, you know, how to do what I want to do, but at the same time, be respectful of others and understand other perspectives. And that comes with, I think, maturity. So initially, I definitely lacked that. So it was the same thing, you know, with friends. Anybody who wasn't on the same page, anybody who wasn't on the same path was just cut. That was it. Pretty much, I was okay cutting all relationships. And that would also extend to family. If they were, you know, if I felt like they're holding me back from who I need to be or what I need to do, or if they were naysayers or if there was negativity in the environment, I made it my job to eliminate negativity, right? I took on Jim Rohn as my first real mentor. I really took his teachings to heart when I was young. And I had a mentor in real life who was directly mentored by Jim Rohn. So she passed on a lot of the teachings. She would tell me things that happened behind the scenes in closed door meetings. And you know, she had that real experience with him. And she would pass that on. Then I would watch all of Jim Rohn's videos and trainings and audiobooks and all of that and get as much as I could. One of the things he used to say is stand guard at the door of your mind, right? You got to stand guard. And when I was younger, I used to literally picture like a Roman or like Spartan, you know, guards at the door of my mind. So protecting against any kind of information that was negative people, whatever it might be. So I had a very militant outlook towards that, which I wouldn't recommend nowadays. I would say, you know, that evolved to just limiting time with certain people, you know, And then eventually, yeah, at a certain stage, the reality is you do outgrow certain people. That's just the reality. So it goes back to priorities again. I feel like this entire conversation is around priorities, right? So what do you want to do? Do you want to be the fun guy who's hosting parties and has all the friends come over and keep that same circle and continue to do what you've always done? Or are you, again, from my perspective, I feel like I'm holding myself to always better and better standards. I have a few friends that are friends since childhood that are still my best friends to this day, and they always will be. That's different. Business never comes up in that conversation. I don't care if I'm a billionaire and they're not, it doesn't matter, right? So that close circle, that's like family. That's completely different. But when it comes to, you know, having a million friends, I'm just not interested in that. I have business acquaintances. I have people in my network, and that's what that is, right? That's just what that is. It's simple as that. So I feel like that's a good way to manage. You know, because you see a lot of people get derailed as they get more and more successful. They have all these yes men, yes people in their circles. And we've seen it with athletes, with all kinds of famous people, right? They get completely derailed because they don't know what to do. They don't know how to control their environment.
They get that like sixth cousin or fourth cousin popping out of somewhere from the wazoo.
They give jobs to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's working with them. And that's a nice thing. You know, obviously you want to employ your friends and family and all of that. In my personal experiences, I'm not a fan of that. I've had that experience. I've employed friends and whatnot. And usually it doesn't work out the way you want it to work out because, again, business is business, family's family, friends and network and acquaintances are their own thing as well. I think, at least for me, I'm just like that in all areas of my life. My mind is very compartmentalized, so I like to separate these different things and maximize each of them. So with my closest friends from day one that I mentioned, those relationships are maximized. They could ask me for anything. They'll have it, no questions asked. Because, again, they're like family, and there's only three of them. So that's that. That's my closest circle. With my fiance and family, completely different story as well. That's, you know, there's no questions asked.
Yeah.
They could ask for anything. They're always number one priority. When it comes to business, there are certain things that I expect. It doesn't matter if you're a friend or not, if you're a family member that's an employee of mine, it doesn't matter. These are certain standards that I have for the business. If they're met, they're met. If they're not met, you're out of that context. So I feel like it really depends on how we're looking at it, but that's kind of how my perspective evolved. Initially, it was very militant. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, it's more tempered and more context dependent. So, depends on what the relationship is. Depends on you know, what I need to do, and you know, if that makes sense.
Now, you have been studying sales for years. Now, you're expert at it. So, our audience, they're small entrepreneurs and building their own business. Let's get into that. You know, let's get for the people that are still learning, you know, in that beginner stage of building their business, what are some key takeaways that they can take with them when it comes to having a smart process of closing sales?
It's a great question. Yeah, we can definitely dive into the sales stuff. I would say to always focus on sales fundamentals. Just for any of your audience who are sales professionals, small business owners that are, you know, in the early stages of their business or just beginning.
Startups.
Startups. Focus on the fundamentals as opposed to fads or, you know, just, you know, simple, you know, day-to-day kind of techniques or things that you hear that are hot today and then gone tomorrow. If you just focus on fundamentals of what goes into a successful product or service, what goes into a successful sales process, what goes into all of that, I think you're going to be more successful. So I'll give you a quick example of this. You know, in modern times, we got a lot of people, you know, that reach out to me or my team, for example, who are looking for jobs or positions as appointment setters or lead generation roles or closers, as they call them. And that's something that I, for example, wouldn't do. If I was a younger kid nowadays coming up and learning sales, that would not be my approach. And all of my own clients who are sales professionals who have come to me from that same context, I've completely changed their mindset because you're going into sales. You need to know everything around sales. You need to know how to find a lead, first of all, how to actually, you know, find your leads and cultivate your leads, nurture your leads. You need to know how to, you know, do the marketing side of things, how to get in front of somebody, get that attention, because that is really the main currency we're always fighting for, its attention. You need to know how to walk them through every step of the sales process, from intro to qualifying to the presentation or demonstration of your products or services, to, you know, actually proposing whatever the deal is, the offers, and putting that in front of them, to asking for the sale, to the follow-up, to continuing to service that prospect, to getting referrals and building that ecosystem. You need to know it all. Like, that's what being in sales is. It's not, I'm an appointment setter, so I only know how to type out these few messages or a couple questions, and then I say, yep, you're scheduled with our team, see you later. I repeat that same process with everybody. I feel like that's the wrong take on things. I feel like you should focus on fundamentals the way they've always been shown to be successful. So if you're going into sales, don't go into one role and try to learn one small aspect of sales. Try to learn sales as a professional would from top to bottom, because that way these skills are transferable, right? I mentioned earlier, I worked in 7 different industries directly before I ever did outsource sales and partnered with companies and ventured out on my own. The reason I was able to go into so many different industries and be so versatile is because I focused on these fundamental skills. I focused on what works. Doesn't matter what the product is, what the service is, what the industry is. I'll learn the product knowledge. I'll learn the competitive knowledge. I'll learn the industry knowledge. That's fine. And that's important. But sales knowledge is what's most important. And I knew everything from top to bottom and what it's going to take to be successful in sales. And that's why it was transferable. Yeah. That's how you build these skills for life.
So let's build a case study just so I think that way we can actually understand the whole process that you're talking about. We are building a sales organization, as you'd say, from an agency side of things, where we're doing client services and we're getting clients within our ecosystem to service them over, like, let's say from a 3-month to possibly a 12-month period. If you're approaching that sales organization and you're building that sales stack from day one, how would you approach it from step one all the way to step 10, if you can get that far, just from a basic standpoint?
Yeah, sure. So we'll go step by step. I'm not going to number them just because it's going to be arbitrary anyways.
Yeah.
So we'll just go step by step. I'm assuming you're asking about how you're going to approach building your sales team and everything from the top, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So I would say, just like we were talking about success, you want to start with the end in mind, right? So you want to know, like, what are you looking to build here? Are you looking to build the next Apple or Google or Facebook and have thousands of employees or whatever else? Or are you looking to be a smaller sort of niche team that services a smaller type of, you know, clientele, and you only are going to have, let's say, 10 salespeople on the floor or in your team, in your organization at all times, right? It depends what you're looking to do, because that scale is going to, you know, have an impact on your approach. So I would say start with the end in mind and figure out what you really want to do. And then from there, I would start with building out the systems, the SOPs, if you want to call them that, the processes that you want to build out. So I'm assuming you already have a product or service in place here.
Yeah. We have a product in sale where we're selling, you know, customized video packages for social media.
Okay, got it.
So towards publishing or to professionals who want to communicate their message or what they do, someone like you as well too. And then we create all kinds of videos with animation or different sounds and just making it like a very unique video to that person that they can post on their social media that can generate leads and also build up their awareness.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. And right now, is it you guys doing the sales part of things? How are you guys taking on clients?
I've been doing cold calling, building up like sales sequences, like using Apollo, having a CRM, having different messaging. And also like the documentation process, I've just built that out like the past 2 weeks. So when someone comes and does what I do, okay, this is how you shoot the shot. You shoot the video. This is how you service a client. So you close them. Here are all the different messaging you can actually include in your Gmail templates to just have a quick workflow. So I'm thinking how the way I'm thinking about it is like, how can I take myself out of this process and what would be the last, what would be like a question someone would ask me, and what can I do to document that right now? So when someone's, hey, Owen, hey, Alex, how do I do this? Oh, just check the G drive. You can go in this folder. You can check that folder. The answer is there. So that's how I'm approaching it, is more of like, I want a 15-year-old to be able to come in there and everything is like laid out word for word, how to do it. So they can just get started and not just follow what has been written, but customize it for your own workflow as well too.
Yeah, as it should be. You want it to be a duplicatable process. Yeah. So I think you're doing a couple of things right. First of all, you have a cold calling or outbound system in place. I feel like outbound traffic or cold traffic should always be a part of the picture. It doesn't matter, you know, how great you're doing. The most successful businesses that I've known, that I've been involved in, always have that piece there. Even when they're doing a ton of inbound traffic and all of that, that's one way to consistently test the market. It's one way to consistently be out there, consistently have a system working for you that is not reliant on, you know, paid traffic or a lot of, you know, capital investment into the business. So sounds like you're doing that right. That's good. Another thing you're doing really right, and I'm glad you're on this path, is documenting everything and writing everything out, building out the system, scripts, processes and all of that so you can duplicate yourself. I was talking to a good friend of mine, actually. He's built a couple of successful businesses. He's very successful himself. He retired for a few years with a few million bucks. He exited the company and he was just trading, just investing full time over the last few years. Just recently, he got back into business again with another partner of his from before. And the partner gave him this business to manage. So he's heavily recruiting now, heavily just, you know, working 12-hour days again, mm-hmm. just building out his sales teams and all of that. One thing he was telling me, I was on the phone with him, he was saying he's learned this time that he's just documenting everything. He's writing out all the scripts, all the processes. He's recording everything. He's fine-tuned the hiring and the recruiting process, just every aspect of the business. He's fine-tuned now because the previous businesses he built, and he built two businesses prior, he didn't really do that. He did it more reliant on personality and more reliant on just his own willpower, his own work ethic and all of that. And that's good, but that's not going to be duplicatable. You won't be able to take that same framework and put it into any business and have it work for you. So that's what he's doing now. So it sounds like you're doing that as well. That's definitely the right approach.
Yeah.
I would say instead of thinking about, you know, building your sales team and hiring people and having everything just
like a BDR or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of that, I would say instead of just wanting to multiply things right now, it's kind of like running paid traffic, right? Mm-hmm. I would say you want to have the foundation set first. So I would, first of all, make sure your products, your services, your offers are, you know,
on point.
In check. They're on point. Yeah, they're going to convert well. They're going to, I would look at, like I said, not just client acquisition, but client retention, right? Mm-hmm. So what kind of retention model have you built in? You set 3 to 12 months. It should be 12 months and onwards because a lot of salespeople, and I think this will resonate with your audience because it resonates with a lot of clients that I work with. So I see this day to day. They're leaving a ton of money on the table. You would not believe how much money they're leaving on the table because they don't have good retention models built. Mm-hmm. So everything's around that first sale, even if it's a high ticket sale. Sure, you brought in a lot of money. Good. But what happens then? You know, is this prospect or whatever the service is, they're probably going to need that product or service into the future as well. They're just going to go do it with somebody else who wanted to earn their business, right? So I think looking at the products or services, making sure you have a solid retention model in there, all of that needs to be set. And then of course, the fulfillment side, right? The last thing you want to do is be a great sales guy, sell a bunch of people, and then not be able to fulfill, right?
Yeah, that's
the classic overpromise and underdeliver. You don't want to do that. In an ideal world, you want to overpromise and overdeliver, right? That's the ideal world, right? Most people would underpromise and try to overdeliver, right? So those are kind of all the different scenarios you can have. So the fulfillment side needs to be in check. How are you going to fulfill that product or service, right? Do you have a support team on the back end, right? Do you have somebody who's going to be there to answer questions or whatnot? You know, is everything that you're going to be providing in the service actually handled and you guys know exactly how it's going to be? Is it structured? Do you guys have internal kind of systems set up on the back end between yourselves, not just outbound systems, but also internal systems? So I'll look at all that first. That's why I think I told you on our first call, when I go into a business initially, I do a full audit. I want to see everything. I ask them for access to their Dropboxes, their Google Drives, all of that, because I want to see everything. I want to see your current SOPs, your systems, your processes. I want to see if you have outsourced marketing and sales teams, what they're doing for you. I want to look at everything because that in itself gives me a good enough picture where already we can make a couple of small adjustments and it'll make a big difference, mm-hmm. right? So it's all these things that I will look at first, right? I guess the analogy would be look at your current base, look at your current foundation, look at your current house and make sure your home is in order. Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it, right?
Yeah.
So then you can go out and test things yourself like you're doing. So then you could do the outbound cold calls. You could do the outreach. You could test certain scripts, certain kind of sales approaches.
Sort of messaging, yeah.
Messaging, whatever it's on, you know, whether it's social media, whether it's cold calling, whether it's inbound, whatever type of traffic it is, you know, you can start to test the sales process yourself and see what works, see what doesn't work. Option close, a couple different offers, see what lands, what doesn't land, you know, just test things out. And then once you have your SOPs, your scripts, your processes, everything built out, everything mm-hmm. written out, then you're going to look at, you know, hiring for whatever position that is.
Yeah.
And
and that's honestly, that it's been amazing just like building that out just because I feel like there's a lot of more weight off my shoulder. Like even if I'm building the scripts out, I'm building the systems out, I know it's for other people, but for me, even sometimes I forget what I wrote. I forget some good emails that I sent out to people. I find myself like a follow-up email, I'll switch it up like 5-6 different times. Like, no, like, what are you doing, Owen? Write one good follow-up email that can be used by everybody, and like you can use it. You can just copy and paste it, plug it in, plug in name, plug in product, plug in offer, and just all these different things. Like, there's so many emails that I've written that I need to bring this all under one umbrella. And also got to give thanks to my background and just being a business development associate. Also, partnerships is another big part of sales as well, too, that no one ever thinks about. Seeing our VPs of sales and how they approach like building a sales organization really showed me that it's not about personality. It's all about structure and organization to the T. Like, every single thing, every single number, all your product, all your margins. Okay, if I'm going to give this customer a discount, we need to understand like how that impacts everything on a dime, right? So building a system that can easily plug and play. Okay, if we do this cost structure, this is how it's going to impact our profit. It's going to impact our fixed costs as a business. Can we offer that as a long-term deal? No, we should be walking away from that sale. So, but before I was like, just grind mentality, make the call, do everything. And I just realized like, no, that is not sustainable like at all. So it's just like as you learn and grow in the business, especially in the sales world, you start figuring out how to be more lazier. And that's actually a good thing, because the more lazier you are, the more you're looking for shortcuts in a good way, just to piece things together so you don't got to do them over and over again, which I find
how to it gets teach.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah. So personality works as an individual. If you're you know, a solo guy in sales, personality could work. You could do well off of personality, right?
Yeah.
But if you're a business owner and if you're looking to duplicate yourself and build a team and scale out, personality is not going to cut it. It's not how it works. And I would agree with you. I would say be efficient, but there's a caveat there. I would say don't try to be efficient at the risk of being effective.
Mm-hmm.
A big difference there. A lot of people, a lot of entrepreneurs, startups, you know, small business owners, they try to be efficient, but that's all they're trying to be, efficient. Mm-hmm. You can efficiently, you know, go to zero, right? You can efficiently work yourself out of business, right? So it's not just about being efficient. It's being efficient, right? But also being effective. Meaning getting the job done. What are we here to do? Right? What is the end goal? What are we looking to get done? What are the targets? What are the goals? So as long as we're effective, but also trying to be efficient on the way to being effective. So I feel like every good sales process, going back to the sales process, has to be concise. So it has to be efficient, you know, has to be to the point, but it also has to be duplicatable, right? So that it can replicate amongst your teams.
Mm-hmm.
It can work over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to convert well. So it needs to set up in a way that converts well. So those three elements have to be in place
for
any successful sales process.
Yeah.
But overall, I think you're on the right trajectory. I would just say, you know, make sure you have these systems and processes and everything built out. Prove it out yourself, you know, land a couple of clients, see what that feels like, see what that looks like, see what the retention model, how it works best, you know, play around with those. And then once you've kind of played around with things, then you can hire out again. You can either do it the way a lot of people are doing it nowadays and hire out for an appointment setter or a lead gen role, hire out for a qualifying call or introductory call individual who just takes on, you know, calls to just qualify the prospect, just ask a few questions, you know, short calls, and then passes them on to a closer, quote unquote. Or you can just hire one person, train them up and say, you're in sales. Here are all the responsibilities and here's what you can do, and, you know, have that in place. Which kind of ties in with culture as well. Another thing with building teams is culture. It's extremely important to have the right culture. The standards are clear in that culture. Whatever the culture is, culture automatically sort of implies that it's going to be work ethic and a lot of that, but that's not what it means. Whatever the culture is, the culture is...
What is that?
So culture is whatever, I guess, the essence of the business is, whatever the business owners or the entrepreneurs want to sort of project into the ecosystem of this business, of this brand, really. You know, so I've worked with companies where I was partnering, we were doing outsourced sales. So we were building sales teams for large corporations, multi-billion dollar companies, a couple of celebrity entrepreneurs in different industries. So our culture in-house was very much of, you know, working hard 6 days a week, sharp, disciplined, on point, sales trained, professional, over-delivering, and converting at an extremely high percentage. And that's exactly what we did. You know, we delivered as advertised, but that was the culture. A lot of people didn't make the cut. Most people didn't make it past 1 month or so, right? Because most people don't want that lifestyle. They don't want to be a part of that culture. But culture is the quickest way to weed out who you want and who you don't want as a part of your system. It's almost like identifying your tribe, right? What kind of tribe do you want to build? Who really are you? It could be vice versa. It could be a culture of, you know, we work 3 days a week. We go for drinks at 5 p.m., you know, every day. We take our vacations. We travel.
It's a 4-hour the 4-hour day week. 4-hour work week, four day work organizations, paying them like all an equal salary. Remember that?
Don't give me that. That was a troll card.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
So that could be the culture. Right? So culture is whatever really kind of
like Zappos type of thing.
Yeah. All these companies have their own culture. By the way, whether they know it or not, you know, they could have a culture that they put in there consciously, or they could have a culture because they never thought about culture, and now their team has just taken on sort of this identity. So I would always advise sort of try to be conscious of the culture you're creating. Do it on purpose. You know, actually sit down and say, you know, who are we? What do we want to represent? What is our culture? What is our brand? And if somebody comes into our, you know, team, do they know who we are? Do they know what we expect? Do they know what our standards are? You know, because I think that's important to building a successful team longer term.
And do you set those cultural pillars from day one, or do you see what works, see what doesn't work, then you readjust?
So for most businesses that I've been a part of when I was hiring people and building these teams, and nowadays for my own company as well, until I'm hiring people, there's a 1 to 2 week onboarding where we're basically going over training, onboarding. So we go over a couple of that stuff as well. You know, what are the values here? What do you represent? What are the expectations? What are the standards? Mm-hmm. Even the schedule, what it looks like on a weekly basis. What are the work hours? All of that. So the standards are clear. The targets and the goals are clear. Comp plans are clear. Everything's clear. There is no question. And again, if they're looking to dive in and they see the benefit and the value, then it's a mutual relationship and it's all clear. So yeah, I would say we pretty much do set it from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And I also think, you know, you're the example. So you can say what you want, but people are going to follow your example.
They're looking at you as like, okay, you're in the leadership position here. If you're not working hard, if you're not setting the SOPs that you set for us, then this doesn't really matter to you then. Then you're a fraud in your own business.
We used to have a saying in some of our sales teams that was, I'm trying to remember this. It was early is on time is late, and late is unacceptable. So early is on time is late, and late is unacceptable. That was our policy around being punctual, right? And you can't be talking about that in front of a room or team of people and then show up late yourself. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to happen. That's not how it works, right? Yeah. Nobody's going to respect that. You're going to have people the next day coming in late. And then what are you going to say? Even if you confront them, even if they don't say anything, even if they don't say, well, you know, you were late yesterday yourself. Even if they don't say that, you're both thinking that. And that culture has just been diminished. That standard has just been diminished by yourself. So if you're going to set a standard, if you're going to have a specific culture you aim for, you better live it yourself. It better be something you genuinely believe in, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Culture is key in everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Got you. So that's kind of more so with the culture fit, because what happens a lot of times that we find is people will say it's not a culture fit, but it's really like a blanket term used to,
it is,
to weed out other people that, even if they are an actual culture fit by your definition, they're using it to get other people that they just don't see in terms of how they look as a fit for their company. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen that as a blanket term to try and gloss over that. Have you seen that at all or no?
Yeah, I've seen that too. And I'm not a fan of that. You know, I'm not looking at how somebody looks. I'm honestly not even looking for talent, or I'm not looking for somebody who's like, you know, the best salesperson. You know, I'm looking for other core traits usually. You know, are they hardworking? Are they coachable? Are they going to listen? Are they going to talk over me every time I'm trying to correct them on something, right? So I look for other traits than just, you know, talent or how they look or whatever, because I've hired a lot of people that I thought would do great. They looked the part, sharp, clean cut, you know, dressed in a suit, looking nice, and they were terrible. When it came to a negotiation or a deal, or, you know, when they're making cold calls, they would completely fumble. They would not know how to go about any type of interaction like that. So they completely didn't fit the role in that context, right? And we had to let them go. And I hired people that you would be shocked that I even gave them an opportunity. And I don't even want to get into examples because I feel like I might offend some people, but off air, I can give you examples.
Yeah.
And I hired people that, you know, the rest of my, you know, team or management team would say, you know, are you sure you want to hire these people? I mean, you know, and I said, yeah, let's give them an opportunity. You know, hire fast and fire fast. You know, we can let them go. Not a problem. You know, if they're not a fit, we'll let them go next week. Who cares? But I saw something here, so I want to give them an opportunity. And some of those people ended up blowing it out of the park, crushing it, staying with those teams or those companies for the long term, you know, doing extremely well. Because again, they probably as well didn't think they're going to get that opportunity. So now that they got the shot, they also had that chip on their shoulder. They worked harder. They did more. They were more coachable. and they got the results. So yeah, I wouldn't look at how somebody looks necessarily.
Yeah, I feel that. As Rich was wrapping up, one of the things that I feel like a lot of us struggle with is outbound, getting those cold calls, you know, getting from cold call to actual meeting. You know, for people that are, you know, looking at outbound and getting nervous and having that, you know, anxiety around that, and cold calling, getting a few rejections, not having a better close rate, what are some of the overarching strategies that you can use to have a better close rate?
Yeah, so first of all, if you're doing any kind of lead generation, whether it's outbound, inbound, whatever it is, whenever you're in front of prospects, they borrow your confidence. You know, your prospects borrow your confidence. That confidence better be there. You know, confidence in yourself as the person who's going to service them, as the right option for them, confidence in your products and services and the results that they can deliver, confidence in your brand and your company compared to the rest of the competitors in the space. So that confidence better be there, and that confidence better come across, because that really is what it is. You're selling them. So you know, you can't say, oh yeah, we have, you know, a mediocre product and we're going to do an okay job, and you know, hopefully we can get you the result you're looking for, hopefully over the next 3 years. That's not a very, you know, certain...
convincing.
Yeah, or convincing, you know, pitch, you know, so chances are you're not going to do well with that. But if you have genuine, real confidence, and by the way, it shouldn't be fake or, you know, altered confidence, because then, you know, it's going to eventually be weeded out. People will see through that. So as long as, you know, again, that's why I went back to when I was giving you some feedback, looking at the foundations being strong, your products, your services, your acquisition model, your retention model, because if the foundation is strong, you can speak with that type of confidence. You know, you can tell somebody, listen, I'm here to earn your business and we're committed to doing whatever it takes to earn your business. Let's look at what your needs are, what your wants are. Let's look at what you are really looking for from, you know, what the main problems you're looking to solve. And let's look at how exactly we can cater to that, right? Mm-hmm. So when you can speak with that level of conviction, chances are the person with the most conviction is going to win in that scenario, right? So I would just say, don't be nervous. Don't be anxious. Like you said, you know, if you're making some cold calls or reaching out to build connections, just understand, you know, do you believe in what you do? Mm-hmm. And you should be selling something you believe in. You should be, you know, selling a product or service you would buy yourself. That's the golden test. You know, if you wouldn't buy yourself, chances are there's some work to do. And if it's your own business, you better get to work. Right? If you're working with a company and, you know, you're selling a product or service that's subpar, okay, you're in sales, maybe you're younger, you're just starting your career, sure. You know, get your experience, get out of there, move up to a better company you genuinely believe in. But if you're the business owner, if you're the entrepreneur, you personally wouldn't buy your own products and services, there's a problem. That needs to be handled before you do anything else, right? So that's one rule. Another golden rule, just quickly while we're on this topic here, is only work for or with people you genuinely respect or admire. Mm-hmm. If you don't respect or admire them, don't work for them or work with them. Mm-hmm. Those have been rules that I've learned the hard way, both of those rules. So I would definitely advise everybody to re-listen to that and look at how they can apply that to their own lives, look at where they are right now. But yeah, back to your question. So yeah, I would look at just being very confident with everything, with the product, with the service. I'll look at having a pitch that is going to be to the point, that is covering all the major elements, the who, what, when, where, why, because they're going to think to themselves, if you're cold calling or if you're knocking doors or if you're reaching out to somebody, any type of cold manner, they're going to think, who are you? Why are you here? Why should I care? Why should I give you any time? This is the most valuable asset, right? It's the only thing where I'm going to give back. So why should I give you any of my time? So you need to answer very concisely and, you know, in the best way possible, who are you? What you do, why you're here, why you should, you know, earn their time, how you can help them, what's in it for them, how they're going to benefit, sort of put that into a pitch. Obviously, in better ways, we have scripts that we follow, we have, you know, structures that we follow, but, you know, have that pitch as well. And then obviously, you know who your target market is, know who you want to get in front of, because you're not going to sell to everybody on this planet. It's just not possible. I don't care if you're the best closer or sales guy on this planet. Chances are, if I put you in front of, you know, 8 billion people, half of them are going to hate you right away or just want nothing to do with you, right? A good percentage are not going to be qualified financially or otherwise for your product or service. Out of the ones that are qualified, some might already be with other people, might not be in, you know, might be in early stages of the buying cycle. So they might not quite be there yet in terms of wanting to make a decision on your product or service. So it's going to be boiled down to a very small percentage of people that you can actually, who are qualified, that you can actually ask for the sale. And there are real objections, quote unquote, or real problems you can solve to get that deal done, to earn their business, right? So I wouldn't try to sell just to everybody or be everything to everyone, because that usually doesn't work. That's why people niche down and want to speak to one target market. Same thing in sales, right? Not everybody's closable. So try to close the people that are closable. So those are just some generic off-the-cuff pieces of advice that I would give you for cold calling in terms of, you know, converting better. You asked about closing as well. In terms of closing, I would just have, you know, a good process, again, that is duplicatable in terms of the closing. Usually option closes work really well for most businesses. So a standard one that I would just say you could always lean on is option closing. So as opposed to saying, you know, Alex, we have this product. This is what it looks like. These are all the details. This is how much it costs. Let's go ahead and get this done side here. And then Alex says, you know, well, I wasn't planning on making a decision today, or, you know, I don't know if this is the right fit, or all these million things that they could say, boil down to a few core reasons, but they could go, you know, about it a million different ways. As opposed to that, it would be a lot easier for most people, especially if you're not a sales killer, sales assassin, as I like to call them. It'd be easier to just say, Alex, you know, based on what I'm hearing, it sounds like this option here will work best for you because it would do X, Y, Z. Always be specific, detailed, let them know you heard them and you're giving them real advice for them. And we have option B here, which I would personally recommend. I think that personal touch, personal recommendation as the expert, if you've done a good job to build your credibility so far, would go a long way. So Alex, personally, I would recommend option B because of X, Y, Z, blah, blah, blah. This is what it would do for you in your case. You have both options. You know my recommendation, which one works best for you. And then doing an option close like that, asking for the sale in that way. So yes or no is not an option. It's A or B. And either way, you're winning. And if you're doing things correctly, if you have a good product or service, they're winning as well.
No problem.
I know I said a lot there, but
you know, I think that was a big joke.
There's a lot to discuss.
Now, you got me thinking about option closing. And as you're talking about that, I was thinking about, we don't have an option close. It's either you do one package and it's like a, hey, this is a 3-month thing you're committing to, but there's nothing that's like a small uplift just to bring them in and then get them on. Like back when I was selling gym memberships, there's like the 7-day free trial. There's like a 1-month membership. As soon as you get them in that ecosystem of coming in the gym, feeling the workout, okay, I've been enjoying this 1 month. Let me get that membership now.
Yeah.
Right? So it's those little things where they can just get a taste of what you're about at a small fraction of the price, but it allows them to opt into the actual package or offer that you originally offered at a rate that's subsidized from the original offer you gave them in the beginning.
And essentially no risk. So there's minimal risk, maximum upside. Mm-hmm. They get to experience their product and service. So that's definitely one way that works well for subscription models and a lot of the major companies you see doing that. So there's free trials, there's upsells, there's downsells, there's multiple packages and options. There are more retention models, there are higher ticket models. It really depends on, again, what approach you want to take. That's why I said, you know, a while back, you want to start with the end in mind. Look at what you really want to build. And when it comes to just products and offers and your packages, there's a lot that goes into it, man, because who are you trying to work with? Do you want to work with a million people, but paying $1 a month, you know, and that's 7 figures in revenue per month recurring, but you're going to work with all types of individuals, all types of personalities. You better have a good support system, you know, back end. You better have a support infrastructure to handle the complaints, the emails, the messages, the outreach, you know, the technical support, all of that, right? Or do you want to charge each client $100K and only take on a select few handful of clients and, you know, service them at that level? So it really depends what type of model you want to pursue. So I would say, again, start with the end in mind before we even look at, you know, building a sales team and scaling the sales team and all the good things we're talking about here. A lot of the foundational questions need to be answered. But you're right. The major companies like you've worked for before, they have all that in check. They've done the due diligence. You know, they know also, by the way, the psychological aspects of sales. Forget, one of you was mentioning psychology before we first started chatting. That's a huge part of sales, right?
It was me, I believe, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, maybe both of you. Who knows, right? So psychology.
We can do a part two on psychology.
Oh, yeah, 100%. We can do multiple parts to this. I don't even know how long we've been talking now. Psychology is a huge part of it, right? So what you mentioned, you know, consistency bias, confirmation bias, all these things play into sales. And like you said, if they come to the gym, in that example, and they're working out for a week or so, now they made a couple friends, now they feel better. You know, people tend to stay consistent with their previous decisions, with their previous actions, their previous behaviors. That's why if you know, get a Netflix membership, you're very unlikely to cancel it, right? Because it's already there. You're probably not going to do the work to cancel it or want to go against your prior decision, because then you're making yourself wrong. Yeah. And we have a tendency not to make ourselves wrong or look for all other evidence to try to confirm our own pre-existing beliefs, which is a huge blind spot in all areas of life. But companies know that, you know, educated You know, professionals know that, you know, high level sales guys know that, and they'll definitely capitalize on that. You better be sure they're going to capitalize on that.
Most definitely. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, that wraps up the show. House is what you can't control. So control your grind, I control your life. I'm Alex.
And I'm Ono Sende.
And I'm Puye Dari.
Boom. That's a show, y'all.
Peace. Have a great week, everyone.